Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Happy summer. I'm Denise Bowles here with Awaken Birth, and we're having a wonderful show this morning. This is really a cool show for a hot time. I'm so glad everyone can join me. It's been a little while, but I've been out here doing the work with birth work and meeting some fantastic people on this journey. Today's show is really cool. It's about a book. It's about a movement. It's about women empowering women. And I'm really excited to have this show on the air today. The call-in number is 323-870-3891. That's 323-870-3891. And today our discussion is about a book. It is called The Doulas, Radical Care for Pregnant People. The authors are Mary Mahoney and Lauren Mitchell. And I'm really glad to have them both on the show today after many months of coordinating between births, between being a doula, running around. I was finally able to get Mary and Lauren on the show. I'm really, really excited to have them on the show. Let me just tell you a little bit about Mary before we get started, as well as Lauren. Mary actually is an LMSW. She's a full-spectrum doula and founder and board co-chair of the Doula Project. She has served hundreds of pregnant people across the spectrum of choice and trained activists, doulas, clinicians, and medical students around the country on the abortion doula model of care. Mary is the former assistant director of the Pro-Choice Public Education Project and a graduate of the Silverman School of Social Work at Hunter College. She is currently a licensed social worker focused on the intersection of trauma and child development. Lauren Mitchell has been working to change the culture of medicine for the better part of a decade. She also holds a master's degree in science. In addition to being a full-spectrum doula and the founder of the Doula Project, she is a certified gynecological teaching associate, teaching medical and nurse practitioner students to be able to perform gentle, patient-centered physical examinations, and a teacher of literature and the humanities in the medical social setting. So we have two powerhouses here, women who are in up to their elbows doing the work, doing the teaching, doing the education, and most of all, doing the advocacy in an environment that usually does not support this. So I'd like to go ahead and jump on into the show, but first I have to apologize. I live here in New York City. There's a jackhammer right behind me, so you may hear this buzzing noise behind me. I do apologize for that, but there's just simply no way to avoid it. Okay. Mary, Lauren, thank you so much, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Denise. We're so thrilled to be here.
And I also have a jackhammer outside my window, so I apologize as well.
Yes. So I want you both to jump in whenever you can when I'm asking the questions. I want our listeners to know that these questions are not rehearsed. Both Lauren and Mary did not get any pre-show questions from me because I like to keep things as spontaneous and off the cuff as possible. So, ladies, I want you to talk a little bit before we get into the book. I want you to talk a little bit about your journey to get to the Doula Project. How did both of you arrive at this wonderful place?
So in 2007, so we started officially in 2007, but this had been, we had sort of been brewing for about 6 months to a year before then. 2007, it turns out, was a really interesting time to be involved in the reproductive justice movement because there was a lot of effort being made to connect people doing birth justice work with people who were doing abortion advocacy and, you know, more standard reproductive justice work. And, you know, it's interesting because the reproductive justice movement, founded effectively by Loretta Ross and Sister Song, had always been interested in connecting, you know, birth and abortion, because it's the same people who are mothers who also have abortions. And, you know, this is all very intertwined within one lifetime. But somehow these two issues, birth and abortion, kept getting bisected. So it was awesome that there was so much effort being made to connect these two movements. But what kind of kept happening is that, and, you know, it was at a point where there was a lot of birth trauma happening in the U.S. The C-section rate was, and I believe still is, at about 30%, maybe even a little bit more. You know, the World Health Organization recommends that it be between 11 and 14%. So, you know, it was truly a problem. And we, you know, there were all these stories of just like trauma in the birthing situations. And so there would be all these doulas talking about the importance of compassionate support for people during birth. And then when it came to abortion, it was a little bit more of like, you know, an empowerment model, like women should be empowered by their abortions. And it's not, you know, that's what we hope for, but that's not always the case. So from there, Mary and Miriam Perez and I found each other very regularly in reproductive justice circles. I worked on, you know, a volunteer leadership council for Mary's organization, the Pro-Choice Public Education Project, which she was the assistant director of. And we ended up just connecting pretty frequently and talking about this, if nothing else, a rhetorical lack. So people have been in an abortion doula role, whether they're counselors or nurses or clinic escorts, unofficially since abortions have been happening, right? There's often somebody who's there who's compassionate, but it's not a guarantee, and it's usually clinic staff, and it's contingent on, do you have time to do this? And we wanted to make it more formal. We wanted to make this like an integrated part of clinic structure. So that's like the very, very beginning. We also found out that 2007 was the year that The Business of Being Born was coming out. And so that was having a lot of influence over communities, just sort of on the back burner. Mary, did you want to?
Yeah. So when we first started, we got into the clinic to do abortions in 2008. And at that time, we were calling ourselves the Abortion Doula Project, because we were only doing abortions. As we began to meet clients, we realized a lot of our clients didn't identify with that word, whether because they were having DNCs for miscarriage management, or that word just wasn't how they wanted to identify their termination. And we also met an adoption agency while we were working at the hospital. And they told us that a lot of their birth mothers had been struggling during their labor and delivery and not being treated especially well by medical staff. At the hospital, we also began doing stillbirth induction. So we realized pretty quickly on that calling ourselves the Abortion Doula Project wasn't really appropriate. And we also realized we were missing this really incredible link that Lauren mentioned earlier, which is that birth and abortion should be connected, even though they are very clinically separated and historically very politically separated. This was an opportunity for us to sort of put that reproductive justice model into on-the-ground direct care work. And so at the end of 2008, we officially became the Doula Project and started serving clients giving birth, having terminations, having miscarriage management, and stillbirth inductions. And we continue with that model now 10 years later.
Wow. That is just amazing. That you saw a need and you stepped in. And that the fact that clinicians were also coming to you and say, hey, you know what, this is what's happening in the birth room. This is what's happening to women who are in childbirth. And I just think that's very powerful. Absolutely, absolutely very powerful. So, ladies, I know you both are here based in New York, and I know that you're doing a lot of work, but guess what? A lot of people don't know what the Doula Project is. So can you explain to our listeners what the Doula Project is?
I should actually mention I'm also in Nashville now. Hooray. So
All right.
Get to see that regularly. Yep. Sorry, Mary. So the Doula Project we've opened up the doula model of care, which is emotional, informational, and physical support, non-medical support. That's basically, it's somebody who's available to provide continuous care, often during labor and delivery. We've opened up that model so that we're also serving people who are having abortions, who are giving birth, who are having, as Mary said, who are having adoptions, or who have made adoption plans, rather, who are going through miscarriage, stillbirth, perinatal loss. Basically, we're trying to cover the gaps that often get that often get forgotten about or otherwise ignored by larger communities of support. So we're trying to make sure that we are available to soften the edges of all of that and to make sure that the people who need care have access to it. We work on an opt-in model, and so what that means is that when patients are coming in for their abortion or miscarriage procedures, there's a doula already there who's like, you know, usually we ask the clinics to tell the clients in advance that they might have a doula there or that they will have a doula there. Sometimes that gets forgotten or lost in the mix, but either way, the doulas are there for every time our clinic partners are doing abortions. And we are available for the clients free of charge. If they want to tell the doulas to, you know, thanks, but no thanks, go away, then the doula is like, no problem, I'll see you after. But often, I mean, overwhelmingly, we've worked with about 40,000 clients at this point, and that doesn't happen very often. People are very grateful for the support. And, you know, in terms of birth work, we partner with a couple of organizations or have partnered with a couple of organizations, but mostly that's coming to us through our website. Like for a while in there, if you Googled free or low-cost doula in New York City, we were the first ones to pop up. So we got a lot of traffic that way. So we were making sure that we were working with clients who otherwise wouldn't be able to economically access doulas.
And we also provide training. So we train all of our abortion doulas. And this year we just got a grant to start our own birth doula trainings and expand our birth program. So we're really excited about that. We serve about 4,500 to 5,000 abortion clients per year, and we serve a little over 100 birth clients per year. So we're really trying to up that number so that more people giving birth can have free support.
Okay, so let's expound that a little bit. Tell me about this training that you're doing as an organization that you're providing doula training, because right now, I'm sure you both are aware, but there are over 70 different organizations and doula trainings currently happening in this country right now. So what makes your training?
That's great.
Yeah, what makes – yeah, well, it's great in one way and it's great in not so great in another way, and we'll talk about that. But what makes your training outstanding? What makes your training unique and different? If a doula was looking or a doula perspective – was looking to certify and to train somewhere, why would your organization stand out and be something for her?
So right now, what we're really focused on is training our own doulas, because some of our doulas come to us and we train them on abortion, but they aren't currently trained as birth doulas. And so we want to make sure all of the doulas in our organization, which is about 100 active doulas right now, are also trained in birth. And we feel that because of the clients we serve, not all the birth trainings out there necessarily hit our population. For example, we do a lot of stillbirth. We do a lot of adoption work. And so we want to make sure we really go in depth with that sort of thing in our training so that our doulas are really prepared to work with clients going through those experiences. In terms of whether or not, we're going to open our trainings up to people outside of the doula project. We haven't gotten there yet. Right now, it's just for doulas inside the doula project.
Right. We're committed to being full spectrum. So there are a lot of other organizations around the country that have followed our abortion doula model of care, and many who are also full spectrum doulas, which means that they're doing birth and abortion and everything in between. But in order for us to hit that model and make it hit home internally, we want to make sure that our doulas have access. Likewise, we also want to make sure that we're able to, you know, birth doula training, as I'm sure you all know, Denise, is really expensive for a lot of people. And we work with a lot of, and we're trying to basically not make our organization, you know, basically whitewashed recent college grads who can volunteer. Which, they're awesome. That's, you know, I mean, frankly, there was a point where I was at too. And, but it's like, you know, that's creating another hierarchy in medical care that we're just not interested in. So by being able to offer a birth doula training that's thoughtfully made and comprehensive, we're offering them another skill set in addition to being able to help our clients better. you know, we don't want to require that people. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mia. All of our doulas volunteer, right? And so we want to be able to give them to this for free, not only to support our clients, but also that, so that they can build their careers and their professions as doulas. So that's another piece of our organization that's really important, is building leadership and also helping people set up their careers in this world of reproductive health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in meeting Mary, I met Mary at a book signing back in February, which I was invited to. And once again, I'm so grateful that I was able to do that. And it was just really wonderful. And your publicist, Ren, we had a really nice time. I want to get into talking more about this. There are some differences, but yet still, you've managed to marry these things together, these entities of doula work together, to make it more comprehensive for women. Now, my understanding from your book signing when you had a Q&A, there is a very extensive application process that a prospective applicant has to go through, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And what are some of the criteria that you're asking for in, as for an applicant?
So one of the, I mean, there's a kind of a large mosaic of things that we're looking for. But one thing that has always been kind of interesting is that, you know, there are a lot, first of all, there are lots of people who would make great doulas, and just because of our capacity internally in terms of leadership structure. I should mention, Mary and I are no longer on direct leadership and management, program management of the organization anymore. We're both board members. So we've moved from the Victorian mother role, like doting over everything, to the Victorian father who signs the checks. So
okay.
We're not as like wrist deep in the details of like recruitment and training anymore, but we're still
okay.
In the know. But basically what we look for, so lots of people can be good doulas, but one thing that's always been interesting is that, you know, when you're a doula, as you know, Denise, you know, there is an activism to it, but it's softer, it's gentler, you have to be a little bit willing to be subordinate in a medical space in which you are a guest. So a lot of folks who come in with training and advocacy and, you know, more organizing-based activist backgrounds sometimes have a little trouble with doula work because you have to swallow your ego, right?
Yes.
Like if you
yes.
get in a doctor's
yes.
face, yeah, if you get in a doctor's face because you don't like what they're doing to your client, well, that's not going to be good for anybody, you know,
exactly.
if you get kicked out of the room. So that's one thing, and we also have to make sure that people are comfortable. One of our big priorities that's always been a touchstone is making sure that people are, you know, interested in doing all pieces of our work. So we don't require at this time that all of our abortion doulas be birth doulas just because of the cost of it, but we do require that all of our birth doulas be abortion doulas. Like, you have to be on
okay.
board with that full spectrum piece. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that way, your doulas, if they are anti-abortion, then they cannot be a part of that organization, it's safe to say, correct?
Correct. You know, it's
okay.
also important to us because one of our clinic sites also does second trimester procedures, and, you know, they have to be okay with that too.
Yes, yes. Okay, so now here's where I'm going to dive in, and we're done with the niceties, lady, but I've given that a couple of minutes. So I want to dive in here. Now, a lot of women who are birth doulas say they cannot be an abortion doula. What? I mean, here you are as a birth doula, you're cheering that mama for a birth of a baby. I would imagine that being an abortion doula would be the complete opposite. So I would like for both of you to take a couple of minutes to describe or educate us on the difference between a birth doula and an abortion doula. And I also want to ask the question, too, does an abortion doula had to have had an abortion in order to be an abortion doula? Because I don't know if you two are aware of this, but there's a new controversy of questions coming up now where doulas are being asked, have you given birth, as part of the client's screening of them? And my theory is you don't have to had to give birth in order to be a birth doula. You don't have to, you know, had to have cancer in order to be a cancer coach, and on and on and on. So can you explain what I just asked?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, and I absolutely agree with you there, Denise, and especially I know you're a social worker like me, and we can't possibly have had all of the experiences that our clients have had in their lives, and nor does that make you better. I think it's all about empathy, and sometimes if you've had an experience yourself, you have to be really good at not letting that get in the way. For example, I just gave birth and had a C-section. And okay. I don't think I want to do any births right now because I think it's going to be hard for me not let that get in the way of the work with my client, right? So I completely agree with you that we don't ask people if they've had doulas if they've had abortions, and it's not required because we don't think that that makes anybody a better doula. In terms of the difference between – Laura, I'm sorry, did you want to add anything to that piece?
No, I mean, I mean, I'll be out in the open, which is like, I hope that people revise that opinion that you need to have had certain reproductive experiences in order to be a good doula, because I have neither had an abortion nor given birth, and I think I'm a pretty good doula.
There you go. All right.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, like Mary said, I mean, it's about empathy, and I think Mary and I talk about this in the book a lot, and we've spoken about it personally at length, just like we culturally define empathy really badly insofar as people are like, you know, I can really understand what you go through, and it's like, well, maybe you never really can. Maybe you can even less, as Mary said, when you've had that experience because you just see your own experience everywhere, and so if we're only helping people to the extent that we think that we can perceive what they're going through, then that's kind of sad. That's kind of like self-absorbed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to work against that. Anyway, take it away, Mary. You were saying what makes an abortion doula an abortion doula?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question, Denise. And, you know, there are a lot of similarities, especially when you're getting into second trimester abortion and birth. So I'll talk a little bit about that. So a lot of our clients who are having second trimester abortion, which in New York City you can have it up to 24 weeks. So they're often given Cytotec to help. First, they're given laminaria. I'm going to try not to get too technical here, but they're given laminaria to help dilate their cervix because the cervix needs to be dilated in order for the procedure to be safe. In addition to that, what also helps dilation, as we know from being birth doulas, is Cytotec can help dilation. And so they're given that before they go into the procedure room. And as any doula who's listening knows, that can start causing contractions and cramping. And so we often use the same sort of physical support procedures that we would as birth doulas, right? So we do counter pressure, massage, deep breathing, and then emotional support can also look. Emotional support, you know, it's hard to ever put that into one category because whether birth or abortion, everybody has a different history. A lot of people have trauma histories. And a lot of people are viewing their experiences in very different ways. So I've been to really challenging births because of trauma histories, and I've been to really to abortions that weren't very challenging because the client felt really good about their decision and like it was the right thing for them. But physically, second trimester procedures, the labor piece can look pretty similar. Now, when you get into active labor, like super active labor and birth, of course, that's a whole different phase. But I would say second trimester contractions and cramping can kind of look similar to early labor. But then once they move into the procedure room, our role really shifts because they're going under general anesthesia. So we like to stay with them while they go under anesthesia because the saying goes, the way you go under is the way you come out. And so we like people to come out of, and so that's like a crucial role for the doula there is to help them go into the procedure as calm as possible. So it can be similar maybe that could be a little similar to someone having a C-section, because there it's a procedure, right? It can be a somewhat stressful procedure, and it's really nice to have the doula there before and after, if possible. Lauren, did you want to talk a little bit about the first trimester procedures?
Sure. I mean, okay, so to be fair, our program, even in terms of abortion doulas, you know, we're very unique just because New York City has pretty open access laws, thank God, which we need. But, you know, so we tend to sort of see, we have a lot of really interesting perspectives because we work at multiple clinics. We do multiple kinds of procedures, again, first or second trimester. We do stillbirth. So it's like this whole interesting mosaic. So we tend to orient more towards the second tries, at least Mary and I do, because we personally, like, those were the experiences that were pretty powerful. So the first trimester abortions, you know, that can be a very emotionally powerful experience for a lot of our clients, but it is actually a very brief, extraordinarily safe procedure. It's about 5, maybe 10 minutes if the doctor is feeling new or pokey, you know, but it's pretty straightforward. And a lot of it is dealing with this, you're helping with physical support in that because it's such a short procedure, the clinics where we serve our clients, people are often awake-ish. They're given what's called twilight anesthesia, which is like a couple of stiff cocktails and an IV. So they're out of it a little, but they're still awake enough to feel stuff. And so a lot of it is just kind of doing pain management while somebody's lying on their back and having cramps, which, as Mary has told me before, after her own labor, you know, that is a special kind of hell, even if it's an early pregnancy and it's only very brief, it's still pretty unpleasant for folks. It's a lot of kind of just keeping track and making sure that they're breathing well. But also it's a lot of the thing I think that carries over into all aspects of this reproductive care is your role as a doula is to be very calm and very clear, you know, and I think that's the thing that when you're first starting out as a doula, it's so hard because, I mean, I can't speak for anybody else, but like I know when I first became a doula, I kind of sucked at it. It got better, thankfully, but like, you know, I was just like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. And part of that is just, you haven't seen it before. And after a point, you get used to the fact that it's like, you know, you kind of have to be this vision of clarity and calm. You know, you're a sounding board for your client and you're trying to help them manage whatever anxiety, whatever physical discomfort, whatever they're going through. And so you just have to be constantly malleable. And luckily for first try procedures, you have to be malleable for 5 minutes at a time, but you could be doing that a dozen times over in one morning.
Right.
So,
right. And
yeah.
I think what really crosses over too between birth and abortion is that educational piece that doulas provide. We do a lot of that with abortion as well. Of course, our clients see counselors before they have their procedures, but we get about 10 minutes with them before their procedures. And when you're in a particular state of anxiety, which regardless of how you feel about your abortion, you're about to have a physical procedure, there's anxiety for most people about what it's going to feel like. So sometimes things go in one ear and out the other. So we also, a big part of our abortion doula training is just kind of going over a lot of questions our clients might have about what the procedure is going to be like so that we can share that with them. And similar to doing childbirth education, right? And also to help them ask doctors questions. The doctors we work with are lovely, but there's always a power dynamic between a client and a doctor, and having a doula in the room can help reduce that power. Because we can just say, you know, sometimes what I'll do with my clients is I'll say, was there a question that you wanted to ask the doctor? And then that gives them, you know, either the courage to maybe ask that question that I knew they wanted to ask.
Yes.
But it also gives them, if they
decide
to
lead in.
Yeah, but it's so very social worky too, right? But But if there's also a client that decided that, no, no, I actually don't want to ask that question, they can just say no.
Okay.
So I think, again, like playing around, we like to say with our abortion work, because we know the doctors and the nurses so well, we like to say that doulas are helping create a community of care where everybody's involved. And, you know, we try to replicate that with birth, but as you know, it doesn't always work that way, depending on who all the providers in the room are.
Okay. Well, you know, I think this was a great conversation to have before we talk about the book, because there's so many myths and so many different interpretations going on out there. And I think this has to be even brought more into the light as far as clarification, as far as having the discussion, and even having birth doulas and full-spectrum doulas having conversations and meetings together, because I think that support and that unity is very, very important. That even if a birth doula does not agree, you know, with abortion and is, you know, pro-life as opposed to being, you know, pro-choice or however you want to put it, I think that support between the doulas is also very important, because it's that unity, it's that education, and it's also that advocacy that even though this woman is terminating her pregnancy, she deserves just as much respect and a voice and that support as a woman who's going through a full-term birth. So I really do applaud the both of you. Yeah, so I really do applaud the both of you for doing that. Now, I want to jump into the book now for the last half hour of our show. So now let's talk about this book, Mary and Lauren. What prompted you both to put these stories and these experiences and these feelings and these paradigms? What promoted you to put this in writing?
So Jennifer Baumgartner has always been a great friend and advocate to us, and if there's time at some later point, we can talk about our first meeting, which was kind of funny. But she became the director of Feminist Press, and we've been out in the world for a while, for like, I want to say like, I guess it was like 2013, 2014, so 6 or 7 years or so. And we had been thinking about how to handle talking about our work, just because the problem is that when you work with journalists, it's like they didn't always handle it in the way that we liked. And sort of like our stories kept being appropriated by different voices, ventriloquizing us in ways that were not appropriate.
I like that word. That ventriloquizing. I like that. I'm going to use it. I have to tell you. I like that.
Hey, listen, you get down with your bad self. Like that's. It's been so. I'm doing a PhD in English right now, and it's one of those things where it's like I'm glad that you like that word, because what ends up happening is that you figure out your like vocabulary of like theoretical poncy pants, like whatever, and then like you just keep using it and nobody thinks it's cute. So thank you for that. Thank you for thinking it's cute. They're like, whatever. Also, I have a cat yowling in heat, which is like the Nashville version of a jackhammer. So apologies for that noise. So, you know, so basically Jennifer put the buzz in our ear, like maybe you might consider writing a book. And we were like, maybe. And then we were trying to think of ways. So then we were like, all right, we're going to do this. And then we were trying to think of ways that we can make sure that it wouldn't just be like the Mary and Lauren show, like how we could do this responsibly for all of the doulas, especially because, you know, we didn't do this alone. And, you know, we have a whole leadership circle and like hundreds of doulas who at this point have worked with us. I mean, you know, and how do we be respectful of our clients, like all of this. So at first we pitched an anthology of like lots of different essays, and Feminist Press sort of said like, well, that might slow you down in a way that might not really work. And also those don't sell particularly well. And we were like, okay, noted. So we went back to the drawing board, and then we ended up deciding that we wanted to collect stories but also work within an oral history model. So we reached out to Anne Fessler, who wrote a wonderful book called The Girls Who Went Away, which is about adoption culture and, like, basically the World War II basically what would happen around World War II, where people would get pregnant and then they would be sent away and then they would come back empty-handed. And, you know, there was all of this closed adoption and stigma and, you know, what happened to these adults who wanted to find their mothers. So it's this gorgeous book, and she was very generous with her time and spoke to us a lot about, like, this is how you can do the oral history model. And the difference between the oral history model versus, like, typical journalist interviews is that there's a heightened symbiotic relationship between you and the person you're interviewing. So with the oral history model, you're basically giving very open-ended questions. And we would start with a sensory exercise where, like, or ask, you know, a question like, tell us about your life before you had your abortion or before you gave birth, if we were talking to a client. We mostly focused on doulas. We mostly spoke to doulas. That's actually, that wasn't one of our original goals, but that's, we thought we would have more of a mix of, like, clients and doulas and doctors. But the doulas' stories were so compelling. So we would.
Sorry, I was just going to interject there. And we sort of realized it was really important, which, like, we realized as we were writing the book, which probably is just the way most books get written, but we didn't know since this was our first, but we sort of found our story while we were in the middle of writing the book, which was that this is a story about caregiving and the toll caregiving takes, and there's not many stories about that. And the sort of silent perspective in the room, and what do we do with our stories? So anyway, go ahead, Lauren.
Well, I think that's actually beautiful because that's something that doulas go through a lot, because that's the crux of our work is we're performing a lot of emotional labor in the room. And it's interesting that emotional labor has become this, and I mean, I know that you know that as well, because that's the case with birth as well. I think the interesting thing about abortion doula work is that our relationships, our relationships with the clinic were really, you know, we exist only as much as our relationship with the clinic is good, right, in terms of abortion work. So we had a very robust perspective of the caregiving structure of those spaces. And so we perform emotional labor not only for the clients, but also for the doctors and the nurses, because abortion providers don't get a lot of love in this world. As Mary said, we found our story as we started writing. And the beautiful thing I started to say with the oral history model, the beautiful thing about the oral history model is that you're not just basically taking the story and running with it and being like, thanks for your story, we've published a book, deuces. What we did, and this is like the oral history ethics, was we would take the story, we would make it into a comprehensive sentient narrative, because people obviously have very complicated lives. So, you know, people would be telling us about lots of different things, and we had to distill it down to a linear story that would make sense to readers. And we would create a more, like, a creative nonfiction lens on it, meaning so that it was distinctly literary. After we did that, we would read the story back to the client, because we found that was very powerful, more than just having them read it. So we would read the story back to them, and then we would change whatever they asked us to. Our clients really didn't ask us to change very much, which was awesome. They were extremely generous with their stories. And then, you know, and it was actually great. Like, our clients actually, not our clients, our subjects. So the doulas, we had a couple of clients in there too, but our doulas were very generous with their stories, and they were generally really happy with the way that they came out, which was awesome. So that's sort of how the book came to be in the beginning. And like Mary said, when we found our story, it was interesting to see the thing that came up for a lot of folks is that there's something about doula work, or at least this kind of doula work, where we're dealing with lots of ambiguous losses, which means they're not necessarily tragedies, right? But often it's a very emotional gray space. And what would happen is that the doulas would end up kind of, like, your own stuff gets dredged up as you're doing that. Stuff that maybe hurt you and that you've just been carrying around for years and learned to cope with, like, in your day-to-day life, because you're dealing with this emotional output and you're constantly reaching into this emotional well that you have to give to other people, you know, your stuff kind of gets dredged up too, and you can't help it. So we would hear just like all of this loss and trauma that the doulas would go through, and that somehow offering doula care helped them deal with it.
The way that most of our stories are written in the book is that there's a story of a doula with her client juxtaposed next to the doula's own personal story, because their personal stories came up during the oral histories, and we wanted our readers to know kind of what motivated our doulas and just a little bit more about them, so there was a personal connection.
Okay. So now tell me, ladies, how has the book been received so far? Are fellow doulas picking this book up? Because, to be honest with you, I'm not hearing a whole lot of discussion here on social media.
I think it's gotten picked up pretty well. We actually heard back from Feminist Press that it sold okay, so that's pretty good.
Okay.
That's awesome for us, especially as first-time authors. I think, it's been an interesting, like, seeing the sausage get made, as it were, being on the publishing side of it, because you get the full thrust of your social media right in the beginning when the book comes out. So for us, that was November. And the fact that it still had a life at all is pretty awesome. We're right now working on figuring out our university tour for the fall, and we've gotten a decent amount of interest. Especially for first-time authors, we're actually getting some really solid support. So we're excited about that, and that's going to be how we want to make our book, you know, continue to live, is to make sure that it gets on syllabus. And we know that right now, I mean, honestly, some of the most innovative activist work comes from people in that, like, 21 to 25-year-old range, you know, because they're energetic. They don't have, I mean, that was what it was for us, too. It's like folks when they're sort of at the beginning of their career path and they're trying to figure out exactly that perfect thing that they want to do, as if it won't change a few times, right, during their life. But, you know, people are interested in doing creative projects, and they don't have, like, you know, maybe they don't have as much financial or life stickiness, or their egos are just really open, whatever. But we're hoping that the book can help inspire those folks to, you know, we did one thing that was appropriate for the time and is still appropriate now, but, like, that was best for us at the time when we were coming of age as, like, adults in the reproductive justice movement. And we hope that people feel inspired by it and then take it and run and do something else that means something to them. You know, every state's different, every community's different, our political climate is different. You know, so we're trying to help folks. We're doing some grassroots organizing trainings with college groups in the fall to help them figure out creative ways that they can get involved.
Okay. So, you know, and the reason why I brought up that statement, not as a detriment or saying that it's not well done, because it is, but I brought up that statement because I would like to see doulas come across the aisle, as it were. And even though they might not practice being an abortion doula, I still think the training is just as vital. I mean, for me, I would take the training because I think it will also help to enhance my compassion for what I'm doing. And it will also help me to better understand loss. Even in birth work, you know, we do have some cases where they just don't end happily ever after. So I want doulas to have more of a discussion along this book and along the work that the Doula Project is doing, because we can't just be very compartmental and just working in our own little space. Because I know, that there are doulas that, for myself, I actually get requests. You know, do you know where I could find, you know, an abortion doula? Do you know where I could find a doula that will be able to help me? I have to give birth to a baby who has fetal demise. Those type of things. And I think we have to understand the, as you said, the full spectrum of a woman's reproductive health. And unfortunately, even in my doula training, abortion, stillborn, is not even really spoken about in great detail, if at all. So I do commend you on this work that you're doing with this book, and with the work with the doula project also, because I think birth doulas need to see the other side of this to have a better understanding. I don't know how you two feel about that.
Denise, I agree, and I knew that's what you meant when you brought up that statement, because I don't know that we've always been more, the doula project has always been a little more on the reproductive justice abortion end of things, and we're just not as well known in the birth community. And so I've been curious, I wish we could somehow see who bought the books, right? But I have a feeling it's a lot of full-spectrum doulas, like Lauren said, a lot of people probably under 30, people who are reproductive justice activists. I get nervous, I'm not going to lie. I get a little nervous when we go to a reading that I know is going to be full of birth doulas. The very first reading we did was out in Eugene, Oregon. And it was for a birth doula group, like one of those community-based where they all sort of have their own careers, but they come together as a group once a month. So I went to one of their meetings.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of shitting my pants. I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. I'd been warned.
Well, and you were pregnant, so you might have actually.
I was warned that there might be some pro-life doulas in the room. And I was like, you know what? At the end of the day, I grew up in a very pro-life community. At my hometown reading, my former priest was there, you know. So all that to say is I chose to read a story about birth from the book at that reading, because I also didn't want to hit anyone over the head with this abortion work. I didn't want to make anyone feel really uncomfortable or out of place. And I found a way to talk about abortion, kind of like what you were saying earlier, that it's about support. So no matter what your choices, your own personal choices are, people deserve bodily and emotional support when they're going through this experience. And we're all women. And as doulas, I feel like we've committed to loving other women. And it was it ended up being the most beautiful night, and people in the room were crying and I cried. So I really think it is about how the work is framed, who the messenger is.
Okay.
So Lauren and I have really been trying to reach out more to communities that maybe won't receive, we don't know if they'll receive this as well, because why preach to the choir over and over?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand that. I really do understand that. And working with birth doulas, I have to say that there is a lot of judgment that happens. There's a lot of sticking in their own boxes and not thinking about venturing out or even looking out to see what another doula might be doing and to offer that encouragement, not just to what the work is, but to that doula herself or himself, that you're stepping out into another avenue of doula work and you're helping and supporting with that. But I do know from book reading in February that I went to, there was a statement made by Mary where Mary said, you know, donor doulas really just do whatever they want. And I do have to disagree to that to a point.
There are some doulas that
donor doulas just do whatever they want. And, you know, I do agree to that to a point, because there's some who do sign the policy and procedures and their code of ethics when they become members, and then they go out and do their own thing. So I think this conversation is really important, that we understand that we're all here to do the work and that there is a code of ethics and a code of unity and a code of policy and procedures that we all stay in to help each other, and not to just say, oh, well, she's an abortion doula, so she's over there. and I'm a birth doula, so I'm over here, and the postpartum doula is over there. No, I may have to reach out to the abortion doula and say, hey, you know what, I've got a client that she realizes something is happening now, and I would like you to reach out and speak to her, or the same thing with postpartum work. So as far as, you know, doulas just doing whatever they want, yeah, there's some rogue doulas who very well might be doing that against the grain, but I would like to see more of that referral that's internal, because I'm going to be referring to the doula project, I'm hoping that the reciprocity would happen also. I'm also very interested in being a trainer or training, rather, in the doula project, because I think this is an avenue of women, of reproductive health, that we're not getting a lot of conversation on, and people feel that they only can have these conversations behind closed doors. So I really do applaud the both of you for pulling back that curtain and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. This is how it's going. These are the type of interactions we're having. And guess what? That same compassion that's there for the abortion work is right there for both the birth work and the postpartum work. You guys are doing it.
Yeah.
That separatism that we do, you guys are doing the work.
I think, you know, in New York, we have so many doulas who are so wise. And I think, you know, in terms of, donut or birth doulas, I think we can say at large, you know, I think what's interesting is that a lot of birth doulas work very independently. And I think part of the trickiest thing is, you know, having to be really subordinate when you're going through a clinic volunteer process, and all of a sudden you're just kind of like, okay, I'm a clinic volunteer, even though I'm also doing this really important role. How do I navigate? Like, a lot of our doulas are these really insightful, amazing businesswomen in their other lives, like running their own doula practices, like on the side, and like doing this like really awesome stuff. And then they come here and they're just like, you know, you're like, whoa, okay, you know. And then, like, also, I mean, I'm, you know, Mary and I are in our 30s, so it's always funny when you're just like, okay, right, you know, I look like I'm 12, so I've definitely had moments where I've walked into clinics and kind of brushed off, like, the 18-year-old volunteer or whatever. And I think that's the interesting thing also. And, like, we're so lucky that we in New York have so many amazing doulas who come from like these phenomenal backgrounds, who are willing to volunteer their time and be abortion doulas, which involves not only the compassionate care piece, but also involves, like, you know, you're gonna be on the bottom rung of that ladder, you know, for a minute in there, and that's okay,
right?
You know.
Right.
Also, I think you would be a great abortion doula, and I'm excited to hear you say that you're interested, because we need an army. You know?
Yeah, it's really something about the woman that we have to embrace and understand that women are making their choices, and we have to support them in those choices, and we have to represent them in these situations. You know, being an African American, reproductive health was founded on female slaves without any kind of compassion or anesthesia.
Yeah.
So I really do get it. And I really do get the work that you guys are doing there at the Doula Project. And that's why I wanted you on the show. And I'm so grateful that you both were here on the show with me, and I promoted the book and everything. And I really hope that this brings about more discussion. And I hope this brings about even articles in other doula entities where they're actually writing about this type of work. Because the woman, as you said earlier in the show, the woman is complex. She's just not one thing. She's many things. And we do have to recognize and even respect those other things that she is. We have 5 minutes to go in the show. Mary and Lauren, I can't thank you enough. But before you go, I would like for both of you to leave us with one tidbit of wisdom that you'd like for our listeners to have. And also, where can you be reached, and your contact information?
Cool. Mary, do you have a pearl ready?
Tidbit of wisdom. Because I just gave birth and I had a pretty tough experience of it, my tidbit of wisdom would be to anyone who's pregnant out there, try as much as you are capable of and can afford to do, try to find providers you trust, because if you trust your providers, no matter sort of what difficult experience you have, your memory of it is going to be much more positive. That was my big takeaway from my experience, because I had a fabulous team I was working with. Lauren and I are also doing a new collection of stories with Demeter Press that we would love for listeners to contribute to. So you can email us at onthepreciposebook@gmail.com to learn more about that if you're interested in writing anything. It's about conception, pregnancy, and birth.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
I guess my pearl, if I could have one, would be, I think especially given our political climate, and again, I live in the South now, which I'm a Yankee and now a carpetbagger, so humility to that. But, I think right now, even with all of the turmoil, I hope that we can find a way to make sure that people maintain an ethical obligation to be their most compassionate selves. and that if that threshold, like, do what you can to get out of your ego to offer something to somebody else, and it doesn't matter if you can't identify with their experience, you just have to be available to help be loving and be clear and be a guide in whatever way you're able to. And if that threshold is low, work to make it better. And if it's high, then we need you right now.
Okay, great. So I hate to interrupt because we have 3 minutes. I want to squeeze in one more thing. What is happening with the dynamic of abortion when it comes to the morning after pill or abortion support in general for women of color? Because the stigma is always there that Black women or women of color are having higher abortion or termination rates.
I think what we tend to see is how things break down against lines of economy. There's been a lot of conversation about that sort of on the back burner, and so far as like that's, white women have abortions too. But it's also like, where are they going? And if they can go to a private provider, right, it can be a little bit more under the radar, and it's not going to be reported in like Planned Parenthood statistics or Medicaid statistics or whatever else. We tend to work, if that makes sense. So we tend to work with folks who, at what we call in the book City Hospital, the big behemoth of a public hospital where we provide care, we tend to work with New York City's most medically and socially vulnerable population. So people who don't have two nickels to rub together, and people who are basically, they've had like strokes and they're 25, things like that. So we see a very unique perspective about who's getting abortions and why.
Okay, wonderful. So could you just wrap it up for us and tell us the contact information for the Doula Project and how our listeners could reach out?
So for the Doula Project, you can visit us at our website, which is doulaproject.org, doulaproject.org. For the book, we have a Facebook page, and it's Face the Doulas, Radical Care for Pregnant People. You can also do a search for us. That's a great way of reaching out to us right now. And then if you're interested in submitting to our anthology, it is onthepreciposebook@gmail.com, and we would love to hear from you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mary Mahoney and Lauren Mitchell, doulas, Radical Care for Pregnant People. I am Denise Bowles. You've listened to this wonderful show. My show production this year for 2017 is Awaken Birth. I am Bold Doula. You can find me on www.bolddoula.com. I'm also the blogger for the Audacious Black Woman, and I'm also proudly a donor doula and ERD for the Northeast for Donor International. Thank you all so very much for listening. Stay tuned. We have some more hot sizzling shows for this summer. Mary and Lauren, this is not the last time that we'll be communicating, but I would love for you both to stay in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Denise.
Thanks, Denise.